Damn it, Nick.
I love being on here with you guys, Nick and Joe. I really appreciate it.
Literally too long didn't read.
TLDR, you guys are awesome.
I know it says live, Nicholas, but are we live? Are we in fact live?
You know what? That is a question I don't have the answer to, and I didn't realize. Is that what you've been asking me this whole time?
Yes. I'm gonna you know, tickle Ryan Parrott right where he itches.
Oh boy,
so we're gonna kick things off with a little sports talk here, because I love this so much. Red Sox get off to a red hot start.
Oh God,
right? They are like a goddamn pistol playing the. Beating the shit out of the likes of the Oakland A's and the Angels and the Mariners, right? All teams that fucking stink. But I will give their pitchers credit, right? The pitchers went out and they dominated. And now, all of a sudden, oh, the injury bug's hitting. Oh, you're telling me if you throw, you know, 80 breaking balls a fucking game, your elbow might fall off? Oh, geez. Oh, let's pin our hopes defensively on Trevor Story, a guy who's barely played since being here. Oh, he's out for the season again. Oh yeah,
the Bravo!
Bravo! I was getting in with my brother, and he's like, "Oh, I wouldn't have expected this injury to happen." I go, "What do you mean you wouldn't have expected it to happen? He played 93 games. He'll play a, I think like 93 games in three seasons."
Trevor Story is a good player when he plays, but the problem is that how often does he play?
Trevor Story is a dime a dozen player who benefited greatly from playing in Coors Field.
That is also true.
I will put him, you know, when he's healthy, he's an above average defender, right? He's a gold glove caliber defender, right? But he's a fucking shit hitter.
Well, right? So I
you take him outside of Coors Field, and I think he's a career 230 hitter.
This is funny. Usually I feel like when you're talking sports that I'm the one that's like, not kinder, but I guess I'll go that route for lack of a better term, because Trevor Story, I wouldn't say that. And I remember hearing when he signed with the Red Sox from someone in the league that the rumor was like the Red Sox got him as a second baseman and it took so long to sign him was because he still wanted to play shortstop and people didn't think he could play shortstop.
He can't make the fucking throw.
So that's, yeah.
No, he's not a gold glove defender now, but in his prime.
Okay, in his prime,
right?
Yeah.
In his prime,
more,
right?
You can give him more, yes.
Right? Anyways.
I mix him up with Tulo so much, which is doing Tulo got injured all the time, too. But that's definitely doing Tulo dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, Tulo was a better player in his prime than Trevor Story ever was. But that's neither here or there, Nicholas. We're not here to bore the people with shitty Red Sox baseball. We are here to talk about comic books, and I would love nothing more than to welcome the ladies and gentlemen, the boys and girls, the listeners of all ages, Nicholas. I've probably sworn a million times, but the listeners of all ages. That's you know what? They're going to hear it, whether it's from me, whether it's on the playground. They're going to hear it.
Okay? Oh, yep. That's for damn sure.
Geeks Worldwide Radio and the Dork Shared Gooniverse proudly presents you the greatest, and I mean the greatest, podcasting team in the world. He's a comic book writer, Nick Fryer. I'm your friendly neighborhood backracker, Dr. Joe. Together, we are the TLDR Comic Book Club. Baby, how's it going, Nicholas?
I am doing great because the aforementioned Red Sox lost today. And who could have seen that coming? They actually don't play a Mickey Mouse organization. Of course, they're going to get pistol whipped. Especially when
Tyler O'Neill, right? I'll give him credit.
Yeah.
He hit a home run. You know what else you can set your watch to? That guy's going to get hurt within the next 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? He'll have like 10 home runs. He's Adam Duvall 2.0.
Yeah. But I was fading the hell out of the Red Sox against the Orioles in their opener. It's like, oh, yeah, they're celebrating the 2024, the 2004 team. Great. They're about to come crashing down to earth real quick.
Yeah.
1-0 lead, and then boom, 7-1 loss.
Who's their left fielder? I don't even know who's playing left field. Duran. I think it was Duran. He makes Manny Ramirez look like fucking Torrey Hunter out there in the outfield. That guy stinks.
You know what? I think Manny deserves more credit for how he played. He played at defense in Fenway. Yeah, Duran is in left field now. And Rafael is in center. That's right. Okay.
I will say this about the Red Sox, and this is it. Two players I absolutely love on this team, Bayo and Rafaela.
Yeah, I mean, how can
they got him locked up? That was smart. That was smart. Good for you, Breslau. All right, good job.
Yeah.
But, now go sign some real fucking talent.
I forgot that Duran moved over to left field because the baseball that I watch is pretty much anything but the Red Sox these days. I watch because thankfully one of the two of us has the MLB TV app, so I am spoiled. Thank you very much, T-Mobile. Anyways, moving on. My bad. We're not supposed to tell people that? I don't know.
I've shared it with like 1,000 people.
Okay. What are they going to do? They ain't Netflix. They need, you know what, Joe? They need everybody watching that shit. So they can
see. Facts.
Yeah. I'm the first one to defend baseball probably in this neck of the woods, but they need all the help they can get always. Anyways, so if you're... We've talked so much sports in the first 5 minutes of this. I hope you all haven't stopped listening. But if you are considering it, then maybe go check out one of our Friarside chats, because barring a conversation with maybe like Ryan Parrott, maybe their John Boy conversation a couple years back. We don't really talk a whole heck of a lot of sports on here. We have Kyle Higgins on. I know that's come up a little bit here and there. And if you're wondering what a Friarside chat is, it's basically when we have a creator from across the industry, whether we're talking about, we could be editors, could be chief creator officers of certain publishers. It could be writers, artists, you name it. We've pretty much had all types on. I'm sure we could expand a little more, but either way, you're only going to find those on our audio channels. We're talking Apple, Spotify, Geeks Worldwide Radio, Amazon, Pocket Cast, all the major platforms. You can find us there. If you're finding us on YouTube or on Instagram Live or on Twitter or X, whatever the hell you want to call it, make sure you go find one of our audio channels as well, because that's the only place you're going to find those Friarside chats. We usually do not do video stuff when it comes to those. Those are audio only. Anyways, and you never know when they're going to come. We don't tell you guys we have them until they're in the hopper. And if you subscribe and leave a 5-star rating interview or higher, you're going to get that delivered right to your listening device. So make sure you do that, because then you don't have to worry about following us on Twitter. You should follow us on Instagram, because Doc does some pretty sick shit over there. And if you watch us on the streams, you can see that with our backgrounds. I love when you do these, Joe, because that means we're doing a mainline episode today. We have some interesting books to talk about today. I have a book that you are, would you say, terrified by?
100%. I put it down after the first page. So nope. Can't do
it. And then you're talking about a Marvel team that I'm not particularly too big on.
You're going to read this, Nicholas. I guarantee it.
Wow. Okay. Apparently this is a Men's Warehouse ad too. So let's get to what we've been catching up on as we've gotten through all our bullshitting. For me, Joe, the only one that I caught up on, at least that I made note of, was Duke issue 4. I will say for me, this was probably the first issue where I was like, you know, it wasn't bad. It's just like it didn't do a whole hell of a lot for me. But this maybe because I'm just not a lifelong G.I. Joe fan who's familiar with some of these characters.
That was them busting out, right?
Yeah. I mean, the end was good. The end was good. So I will check out 5. They deserve more than just, you know, one where I'm like, and then moving on. But anyways, what have you been catching up on?
So I got through most of my stack. I'm pretty much caught up through my stack. Zorro issue 3, Sean Murphy, love it.
Oh yeah,
so good. Red Sonja, City of the Damned issue 1. I told you I'm a full blown Red Sonja convert, right? And this was written by Steve Niles. I just finished the run, the arc that was written by Dan Panosian. Before that, it was Mirka Andolfo who got me into the character in the first place. And now this by Steve, this was a really, really solid first issue. The character, she's so badass. I don't read a ton of fantasy comics. So this sort of scratches that itch. And this was just really well done. Steve Niles is a great writer. So as soon as I saw, the previews for this in Panosian's Red Sonja, and we talked about it in the solicit, I go, Steve Niles, gotta read it.
Okay.
Right. Gotta read it. But a book that I want to talk about, and we don't do this a ton, books that we highlight from catching up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I finally, this has been sitting. These two books have been sitting in my stack, and I don't know why I hadn't gotten to them sooner. But Dark Spaces Dungeon issues 3 and 4, written by Scott Snyder with art by Hayden Sherman, not Hayden Christensen.
Either way.
And man, I can't remember who the user was on Twitter, but we had a nice little back and forth about this, because I had retweeted because Snyder had posted about it. I did a retweet and a nice little back and forth. This series is fucking tremendous. I can't wait to talk about it. it's giving me Silence of the Lamb vibes.
Ooh.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Like Snyder is just like, he's in some sort of zone with this sort of cat and mouse. I wouldn't even call the antagonist a serial killer, right? Because he's got people like locked away in these dungeons, very Buffalo Bill-esque, right? But a lot more involved. There's a lot more to it than just like, you know, say a serial killer kidnapping someone, keeping them down in their basement. No, this guy, this antagonist is methodical. This is decades and decades of torment that he's inflicted on people, and just the cat and mouse aspect of it. And you know, one of the main characters is an FBI agent. He was one of the only people who was abducted as a kid to escape, you know, these dungeons. They're elaborate torture rooms, essentially. Damn. And people are in there for decades, right? Because he keeps them barely alive. So this kid escaped and became an FBI agent, and now he's, you know, trying to track him down as a new kid has recently been taken. So this is like, if you're into that kind of stuff, that thriller, that suspense, like that borderline, like I would say horror, not in the traditional sense of horror, but like in that suspenseful kind of state of horror. This book is fantastic. If you haven't been reading it, do so. Catch up.
You have dibs on this, so I'm out.
Yeah. Okay. The Dark Spaces universe that Snyder has created in general has been fantastic. I haven't even read them all. I've only read a couple, but this one here, Dungeon, knocks my bloody socks off.
Yeah, he was really saying how this might be like his scariest title.
It's fucking twisted, man. It's dark.
Nice. That's really cool. I'm very interested to hear a little more about this. Of course, that's from IDW, who I'm sure we'll touch on in some capacity in a bit. But we got to get to what's new for this week. And normally, Joe, you start us off with Marvel. But today, you're going to start us off with DC.
I am, because I'm discussing a Marvel book. That's what we call a hot tease. Hot tease. I don't know if that's a thing I just made up, but it's nice. A hot tease.
I'm here for it.
You're damn right you are. So from DC Comics, we have Action Comics 1064, Green Lantern issue 10, The Batman First Night issue 2, Red Hood the Hill issue 3, which you're reading but didn't get to read this week.
Yeah, just, you know, I think that says something about the first two issues. I mean, I've been pretty honest about the first two issues, just like you're not getting a whole hell of a lot of Red Hood. So I will check it out before next week, but there were other things that took priority over it, quite honestly.
Yeah. We have Outsiders issue 6, Suicide Squad Dream Team issue 2, Speed Force issue 6, Sinister Sons issue 3, Batman Dylan Dog issue 2. Batman, Robin, and Howard issue 2. And then a book I want to discuss. Why are you saying, well, everything okay?
Yeah, I'm just joking around because, you know, Batman, Robin, and Howard. And then you also got Batman and Dylan Dog.
Right.
Of course, all these characters, you know, I'm not familiar with, especially that Batman guy. No clue who that is.
Well, yeah, we had a commenter say, you know, the way I say Spider-Man, you know, Dark Horse, right? It was funny at first. And because it's become a nervous tick, you know, just kind of happens.
You're not going to stop doing that. I don't care what he said or her.
No. Spider-Man is here to say, but thank like you. Abound and Dark Horse, right? Those I'll say them too.
I don't know, man. I can't make any promises. Sorry. That's what we do. I like you doing it. So I'm going to be pissed if you stop doing it. Cause I like it. You made rules on Batman and Superman. You said, I can't do that shit.
Yeah. They just don't sound right. It doesn't feel right. It's not as organic as Spider-Man. It's Abound. That's what I do here. But from DC, a book I wanted to highlight is Batman and Robin issue 8. This is like, I loved like when Williamson, he wrote a singular, you know, Batman, I mean, a singular Robin title, which I talked about on the show, never thought I would. Absolutely loved it. Right. And Williamson, he's been very much involved in all things Batman, Robin, Bat Family, you know, going on at DC. And so when it was announced, it was Batman and Robin, I was like, oh man, I was a little disappointed at first because I don't always need Batman, right? We don't always need Bruce Wayne, Batman, in these. You can tell a great Bat family story with any of these characters, and if you have the right, you know, writer attached to it, they can be great books, as you know, Josh Williams did with Robin. But the way he's been writing Batman and Robin, it's been a really great buddy cop series, because as similar as they are, they're also very different, and you've got that father-son dynamic to it, but there's just been really, really great stories, and he's bringing some of this stuff in from that Robin series into this series, you know, with Flatline and a character called Shush, not Hush, Shush.
Interesting.
That's been so, like, that arc, this most recent arc with that has been really fascinating. It's been action-packed. It's just been really great stuff. So, like, if you're at the comic book shop and you're seeing, like, Batman and Robin, and you're like, yeah, Robin, and if Joshua Williamson's name's attached to it, people, grab the goddamn book, especially this series. I absolutely love it. I don't know if I'll talk about this series as a standalone like I did with Robin, but I'll definitely talk about it, you know, each month, especially when a kick-ass issue comes out, because I just love it so much, and it's a great dynamic. I always thought Damian Wayne was just a little fucking shit that I couldn't stand. And he still is a little shit, but Joshua Williamson just gives him just the slightest bit of humanity. And like, just like humanizes him just a smidge. They go, all right, fucking yes. I love Damian Wayne now. He's great. Right. I highly recommend this series to anyone reading it. And this is something you can give to your nephews to read. It's not, you know, horrifically violent or anything like that.
Okay. So, but basically, if you see Joshua Williamson doing, like, writing Robin in some capacity, you're interested.
Batman in general. Joshua Williamson, DC, just fucking grab it.
Okay. All right. Moving over to Image, we got the Scorched issue 28, Phantom Road issue 10. Oh,
excellent.
Ooh, Napalm Lullaby issue 2.
So I had this one earmarked, right? This is the make or break issue for me, and I fucking forgot to read it today.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Okay, it happens.
I'm catching up next week, I'm sure.
Okay, I am very curious. I hope you tell me before catching up next week, because I'm very curious. You're gonna keep me waiting now. Sometimes you can't wait to tell me about a book, and you text me eyeball emojis, just like title eyeball emojis, and it's just now, so you're gonna make me wait.
Well, two things. There's two things at play here, Nicholas. One. Oh. My age-addled Swiss cheese brain.
That's true.
And two, the motivation to really want to grab the book and make sure I read it ahead of time.
And that's what that means.
That's just that we're being honest. Yep. We're an honest podcast here, people.
Yep. Then we got The Cabinet issue 3, St. Mercy Godland issue 1. I think that's the second volume of the St. Mercy stories and stuff. And then we got Rat City issue 1, which... you'd call dibs on, you have undibs it. Mm-hmm. I read it. I understand why.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. Yep. I'm not going to say you're trash. It's not a bad book. It didn't pull me in.
100%.
Right. No, it did. There was just certain elements to it that just didn't pull me in. And hey, we not everything is going to be for everybody.
100%. But what is for at least you and I, and maybe everybody, is I Hate Fairyland issue 13. And I actually like completely mean that with this specific issue of I Hate Fairyland too, because look, obviously like, with all the different titles, when you start going into multiple issues and everything, you want to have read the previous one so you understand what the fuck's going on. But I will say this is like a little bit of a one-off issue in a way. Now, I don't think you can appreciate it without having read about Gert previously, but at the same time, if you guys have listened to me talk about it in the episode I did fairly recently on I Hate Fairyland, you kind of have an idea what's going on with the character. Then you get into this specific issue, and the whole issue is just a commentary on the film industry. So it's kind of putting the whole like general larger plot on pause, and it's a Scotty Young saying, you know what, I have a story that I need to tell you guys. I don't know if Scotty Young went through this experience. I'm assuming it's got to be inspired by at least somebody he knows, if not his actual experience, because it's just like the stuff felt very familiar in terms of like commentary on Hollywood in general. And I just, but for me, it's like seeing Gert go through this whole experience was kind of perfect. And it just, and again, it felt like, oh, I'm getting this like from the writer, from the artist. No one is editing this. So it felt a little more personal. And I will say too, if this is based on an experience with I Hate Fairyland that Scotty Young had with like Hollywood, I would be rip shit because like, dude, this has such high potential to be an awesome, awesome adult animated series. Like, it, like totally, like he has that, like this cartoony art style. And of course, Brett Bean is doing the second volume of I Hate Fairyland. And I just think that if you could capture that type of approach in animated form, which I would believe you can, I feel like I've seen that in cartoons before, it could really, man, it could be like a game changer for the adult animated space, especially for like, you know, stories that animated stories or shows that are inspired by comic books. So I really hope that's not what happened to Scotty. But at the same time, if it is and he walked away from it, I also appreciate that because this I Hate Fairyland deserves better.
Yeah, it'd be awesome if it was like on HBO Max or something.
Yeah, I feel like Amazon's the place to that we're going to see more and more of that. Netflix can. Like Netflix does obviously does anime, but obviously we have Invincible is the big one. I've talked about Vox Machina, and then we're getting Witches too.
How have you felt about the second half of season two of Invincible?
I didn't watch the last episode, but definitely stronger.
Stronger. My only beef is that it was really like heavy on the relationship stuff. Right.
Yep.
And I just wish they could have like tightened that up a little. You know what I mean? Because I love it, but I think part of it is I don't, and I love Sandra Oh, but I don't care much for her voice acting in this. And I wish like the Mark stuff with Amber, maybe get past that a little bit quicker and really, but I guess it all sort of leads up to how the season ends and stuff. But I was like, I wanted a little bit more action. Mm-hmm. I wanted a little bit more. It wasn't very upbeat. I wanted some more, you know.
I think the second season of any show is just like it's always like kind of
like I love the first half of season two. I love the first half, and then we get that cliffhanger, and then, you know, and then it's like we get that delay, and I think it's just been a slower pace to it.
The delay was just, I know the whole commentary, like that whole joke.
That was hilarious,
and I respect it, but at the same time, it's like we waited a long time for two. Don't like the delay is just, that's tough.
Yeah, yeah. I think the second half of season two had a pacing issue, and that's took me out of it just a little bit. But
man, isn't that pause still is kind of do it on its own? But anyways, speaking of Skybound, we do have Transformers issue 7. We do not get the review copies, but you and I have been loving Transformers.
So, a patient of mine loves comics. Loves Transformers, right? And but hadn't been reading the comics, so I went through and I grabbed all my issues. I didn't have issue one because I bought it digitally at first. So I told him, I go, here's 2 through 6. He's a big digital comic guy, so he's like, oh, I'll just grab it digitally. He goes, but my daughter will love these. It's great, awesome. Here you go. And I realized I got home late at night. I gave him the stack, but like issue 5 like fell out, so it was still on my back. So I gave him issues 2, 3.
Oh geez,
4 and 6. Go, and I won't see him again for like another month. So like,
oh no, but that's awesome though. And he'll just buy it. He'll get it digitally for his kid and everything. But that's great. That's awesome. Yeah, Transformers is definitely a good one to be handed out to people. Look at Doc. His work doesn't stop just when the show ends. He's always grinding, helping the medium. Then we have AWA Studios, Joe, the book that I called dibs on. But then it was robbed from me for the sake of the people, not for the sake of you. Little Black Book issue 2. We've obviously talked about it quite a bit because you and I got an early look at not just the first issue, but also the second issue. We've talked to Jeff McComsey and Felipe Quina on the show. You can catch the Friarside chat from a little while back ahead of, it was ahead of issue one. Joe also put up preview pages from the first issue, from the second issue, excuse me, as well, over on our Instagram page at @TLDR_pod. We've talked about this ending a lot. Obviously, we're not going to go and spoil it for the people. We've also talked about the first issue's ending a lot. I'm very excited for them to finally get this second one and understand why we've been raving about it. But the one thing that I just wanted to say, and circling back on all of this, is that what's so interesting as we've talked about it more isn't just that these are both awesome endings to issues. It's how they're just awesome in very different ways.
Yeah, two completely, you know, like, two completely different cliffhanger type endings, but two very, and two you don't see coming at all. And what I love most about these first two issues, and I see why this is, because when we chatted with Jeff, he's got a great sense of humor. And what he does is, this is a very dark story, but he's able to sort of, you know, add this levity to it, add humorous situations to situations that aren't very humorous at all. And then Felipe did a great job with some of his facial expressions at interjecting some humor when, like, there shouldn't be humor there, but it works. And I love that about this story, because you're just getting this really well-rounded, excellently executed story that pulls you in right from the get-go. And, like, we can kind of see where it's going, but the way these two issues going, and I should say, tell you, you have no idea where it's going to go. Because just when you think you're going down this road here, bang, you're getting swerved.
Yeah.
And I fucking love that.
Yeah. But everything you think you know that's happening as you're going through, even if you're reading the second issue, as you're going through it, you have no clue where things are going at by the end of it. Yep. 100%. What do we got from Boom this week?
So from Boom Studios, we have House of Slaughter, issue 22, of which I still need to catch up on the issue 21. We have Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, The Return, issue 3.
The penultimate issue.
The penultimate issue. I love that word, penultimate.
It's a great word. Way better than the, you go into the final episode, and like before that, it's penultimate. It's like you're guaranteed for a letdown with the final episode.
Oh, 100%. 100%. But I love the word nonetheless. Jim Henson's Labyrinth Archive Edition, issue 1. And then a book we've talked about many, many times recently, Uncanny Valley, issue 1. This is written by Tony Fleece with art by
Dave Watcher.
Thank you. Love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah. I mean, we talked about it last week when we did a little look ahead, and we were able to chat with Tony about it. And he told us, you know, he gave us a really great sneak peek a few weeks back when we had him on the program. So just, this is a fun book, and it's wacky. It's deep. It's beautifully illustrated. Tony is a hell of a storyteller. So make sure you go grab Uncanny Valley when you hit your local comic book shop this week.
Yeah. And the attention to detail with his writing, I was very impressed by that in just the 10 pages. So I think that a lot of our listeners will catch on that. And they'll see why, but yeah, awesome stuff. Then we got Dark Horse. I believe is how you pronounce it. we have Count Crawley, Mediocre Midnight Monster Hunter, issue 3, which is title of the year for Joe. And then speaking of Monster Hunters, we actually also have Monsters Are My Business, issue 1, by friend of the show Cullen Bunn, with art by Patrick Piazzalunga, I believe is how you pronounce that last name. Joe, did you read this?
I I didn't get a chance to read it.
No!
And I know what's coming up.
Oh, dips. Yeah. I can't believe it. We talked about it. Oh my god.
Well, because you said you didn't call dibs on it, and I said, okay, good. So honest question, if I had read it, would you have called dibs on me still?
Nope. I wanted to let you read it still. I wanted to, like, it's a Cullen book. Like, we do it once in a while. You know what I mean? But like, sometimes we try to share, and we have a lot of stuff, but
I was ahead on my reading. Cause I think we had this discussion yesterday, or was it this morning?
I think it was the morning of our recording this. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause yeah, I had every intention of reading it. And then I was, so I'm going to read it now. And then I had it queued up. I was like, no, let me read this instead. So I started and then I had to go out and run. So I just fuck.
So yeah, I mean, because there are sometimes with these books, like with ones that where it's like creators we know or something I think you will like. I want to hold off on calling dibs because it's like I want to give you a chance to experience it and everything too. But when you don't get on top of it, then I'm not gonna like I gave you your chance.
It's fair. That I can't gripe about this one. I had every opportunity. This is you're not being a snake on this one.
Although, well, give it a month when we get to issue two. You're gonna call. I'm curious if your Swiss cheese brain is gonna forget and call me a snake again. Everybody else, take fair. Note. Make a note of this one. But I don't want to timestamp us. But for me, I just saw the title and I was like, okay, Cullen's the writer on this. I want to check it out. Again, same for you, of course. I'm not familiar with Patrick's art style, but then I see the cover and I'm like, oh, okay. So this has got like a cartoony vibe. And I wasn't sure if it was Patrick doing the cover art, and it is. Then I get to the interior and I'm like, oh yeah, this is, I wanted more cartoony stuff. Like after reading I Hate Fairyland and then getting what we're getting with Tony and all the in between, obviously Stray Dogs from a couple years back and now Feral and then Uncanny Valley, you're getting all this cartoony stuff. And then we get this. And anytime I'm seeing Patrick Piazzalunga's like name attached to a project, I'm going to be interested because we're getting that cartoony art style. And then on top of that, for me, it's like, ooh, so you have that. And then it's a Monster Hunter story. And then Cullen is, you know, Cullen has a tendency to get violent and can get a little scary with some of his shit. It's like, oh, okay, this is an interesting mix. And dude, a great mix of like fun and vicious violence. You have this Monster Hunter team of this big burly dude named Grizz, who's, you know, who's the muscle, but he's also running the show. Then you also have Hillary, who seems to be more of the brain of the team, but she's also like kind of untrustworthy in a way because she keeps like you guys will learn. I don't want to say more than that. You'll learn as you read this. And then you have Cuddles, who would have been Joe's favorite character probably. And he's basically Grizz's like sidekick. And he's a koala who fights these monsters. So and you see them all on that cover. I had a blast reading this and I was like, oh, man, like. Part of me wants to call dibs, but I'm not going to, I don't want to do that to Joe. And then, you did it to yourself. Are you seeing some of the art right now?
Well, I was just, because the name sounded familiar and I was like, oh, did he do any, you know, because for some reason I feel like the name sounds familiar, but I'm just looking and at least, let's see here.
Yeah, well,
yeah. According to comics, League of Comic, nothing I recognize. Some Marvel stuff with Captain America and X-Factor stuff like that. But okay. For some reason, I thought he had done some stuff over an Image, but I was mistaken. Okay. Wrong Italian.
But either way, I'm very excited now that I have dibs on this one because it was off to a really really fun start. But that is it for Dark Horse. What do we got from IDW?
So from IDW, we have the book I have been waiting for, and I'm hoping to get a chance to talk to writer Peter. I think it's Hovarth. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, issue 5. This book has just been surprise book of 2024 / end of 2023. Just everything about it again scratches me right where I itch. I just go back into this sort of, you know, an analogy, a comparison, whatever you call it, of Dexter meets the Berenstain Bears. Like there's something about it that says no, this shouldn't work, but it is fucking perfect. And it's just great suspenseful, you know, storytelling. I can't wait to see, you know, where this book ends, how it ends. It's been great. And now I know when I see, you know, when I see Peter, his name on a book, I'm going to grab it and write it. That's the effect he's had just with this series alone. And I love that. I love when I discover writers like that, because then it just, you know, gives me, you know, it just continues to open up the library of books to read.
That's awesome. Yeah.
We have Earth Divers issue 16. Dark Spaces Dungeon issue 5. That was, I think, why I went, was like, go ahead and get these fucking books read, ding dong, so you can read you know.
But it's so funny when that happens, where it's like, it's a book I've wanted to read, but for some reason I just can't, like, I can't do it. I mean, sometimes I've talked about it, it's like the die effect, where it's like, I need to be in that exact mind space, and then if it doesn't strike me, then I can't read. But sometimes you just gotta force it.
Yeah, and this is a heavy one too. And then let's see, TMNT Best of Alopex. I don't know who Alopex is. Well, zero idea who this character is in the TMNT.
How do you not know who Alopex is? He's the best. Or I don't know.
We don't know.
Yep.
Dungeons and Dragons, A Thief of Many Things, and issue 1, and My Little Pony, Set Your Sail, issue 1.
And then from Mad Cave, we have A Legacy of Violence, issue 12. When the Blood Has Dried, issue 1, which I'm going to give you first crack at that, because I do have the review copies. I haven't checked it out yet. But
fucking tell me. You never fucking tell me.
Yes,
you
always, I know,
sit on these goddamn things, Nicholas.
I know.
I would love to have read this for today.
I'm so sorry. I apologize. That's on me. Because sake. I was too excited about the return of Nottingham. Issue 11 out this week. When I said I was going to talk about Nottingham on the show, I did not know the title was going to be returning. I knew it was due to return at some point. I just didn't know when. And I don't think I put it this way previously, but Nottingham is a must-read series for noir fans and folklore fans. If you don't need to be a fan of both. If you're a fan of one or the other, you are going to enjoy this series. And then if you're not even like a fan of if you wouldn't identify as either, but you like Robin Hood, again, check this out. And then check out that chat from earlier if you haven't already. David Hazan is the writer. Shane Connery Volk is the artist. Great return to the story. Again, this is the third arc. This is a perfect table setter. And I do think that if you can't find like the trades, and you're like, oh, I really want to check this out, I'm excited about it, Robin Hood, blah, 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 I do think you can check this out, pick this issue up, and it'll give you a good feel, and you can get an understanding of things that have gone on. It'll definitely like spoil stuff from the first arc, but at the same time, it's very accessible for a new reader. Just in general, for people who are going to get ready. I know you're not a fan of that. I don't fucking do that either, but I'm trying to help the people out, Joe.
No, I'm still pissed about you not sharing the fucking Mad Cave books.
Oh, I apologize. honestly, fair. You know, with moving the story forward, with this issue, the story moves forward, but it's operating with a lot of the same pieces that we've kind of already been playing with as readers. So that's kind of why I think it's accessible to the people. I'm like, for everybody who's been waiting for this, and there's people who've been waiting a lot longer for me for the return of this title, it's a great start to this series. So I hope you get going on this soon, Joe, because it's definitely going to be worth your while.
Well, we've got issue 100 fastly approaching in the next 3 years.
Hey, at this rate though, man, we're coming up on. I mean, obviously, I'm sure C2E2 is going to throw everything off. We do need to figure out what the fuck we want to do with.
That's a big one. That's a big one. It's 4 years to get through 100 mainline issues.
Yeah, well, yes. But don't be fooled by that if you're a new listener. We don't count our Friarside chats. They're not mainline episodes.
Anyway, or our specials.
What's new, none of that stuff. So we'd be at 200 probably by this point. Anyways, I'll take us through these next few before we get to Marvel. We got Vault Unnatural Order issue 4, Titan, Star Trek Explorer issue 1, Nouns, oh, wait a minute, what the fuck? I told you we don't have this on here anymore. Nouns, Noun Town, issue 2. If it's out this week, I want someone to send me a picture if it's out this week, because I don't believe that it's out this week.
I don't believe you.
Dynamite, Thundercats, issue 3. Of course, you're all on the... Joe, I haven't read a single issue. I have the first two issues. So, if you want to talk about it on the show, you know, now's
the
time
to call. Yeah, okay, dibs. I'm fucking taking it. Okay, Thundercats, baby. You know what I need? You know what I need New Ray Comics to do? I need a fucking Thundercats t-shirt is what I need.
Ooh, yes.
We'll be on our lookout at C2E2.
Oh, good call. Hercules, Hercules issue 1 is also up from Dynamite. Jennifer Blood, Battle Diary issue 5. And then we got Sweetie Candy Vigilante issue 2, which then, Joe, brings us finally to Marvel.
All right. Hold on to your butts.
Jeez.
According to League of Comic Book Geeks, 87 books from Marvel this week.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Light week. Going on over there? Yeah. Yeah, for them, actually. Hey, so it would be like. We have The Amazing Spider-Man, issue 47. Wolverine, issue 47. Now, I know I said issue 46. I was a little about. Have you read it yet?
Yes.
Oh, baby.
Yep.
That's it. This one's a doozy. Ultimate X-Men issue 2, Fantastic Four issue 19, The Incredible Hulk issue 11, Darth Vader issue 45, which I have to catch up on as well. I'm going to read issue 44. The Invincible Iron Man issue 17, Resurrection of Magneto issue 4. I know we talked about this ad nauseum, like so many fucking Marvel books need to catch up. Definitely need to catch up on this one. Carnage issue 6, X-Men 97 issue 2. Edge of the Spider-Verse, issue 3. Symbiote Spider-Man 2099, issue 2. Miss Marvel, Mutant Menace, issue 2. Weapon X-Men, issue 2. Star Wars, The Last... The High Republic. Jesus fucking Christ. Issue 6. Thrawn Alliances, issue 4. Aliens, What If? Question mark. Burgundy, issue 2. Leading me into my book for this week. And this was inspired by the Mac and Goo program because I'll give them credit. This is inspired by them.
Read a book.
Yeah. Well, they asked us to read the book for them because they can't read. But last
Spark
week,
notes.
Spark notes. Yeah. I definitely did my fair share of Cliff Notes in high school.
I think we all did some capacity. Right? I'm sure both of our wives would be like, we didn't do it.
This is way before Wikipedia. Man, had Wikipedia been around? Oh, shit. I might have been an A student.
I had Spark Notes. You had Cliff Notes?
Cliff Notes. Spark Notes were there in their infancy. Cliff Notes was... They had spinner racks at Cliff Notes at the fucking bookstore, the Jabberwocky Newburyport.
Oh?
Anywho, Marvel last week put out a tweet saying, if you want to read some books ahead of the Fantastic Four movie, here are some books you should read. It was like Fantastic Four issue 1, it was Fantastic Four random issue whatever, but one of them was Life Story issue 1, which I found surprising, because if you're gonna like, if it seems like the movie is gonna be based in the 60s, makes sense that why would you just take that one issue from a story and not take more, you know, why don't not just tell readers read, you know, Fantastic Four, Life Story 1-6. You don't need to pull everything from it, but like, if you're just going to pull, you know, from issue 1, then that tells me you're just ripping the aesthetic. You just want that aesthetic for the time period they're in. But I'm going to tell you why you need to read the entire fucking series, because it is excellent. And I know you're not a Fantastic Four guy. You know what? Neither am I, but I love these Life Story stories, if you will. Chip did it for Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Which I absolutely love. And Mark Russell, which I forgot, wrote Fantastic Four Life Story. And he's when we talk about excellent writer, he's an excellent fucking writer.
Yeah, that's kind of rough, because we had him on the show a little while back to talk about a couple of his AWA titles. Of course, he's done Not All Robots, which won an Eisner. And then most recently did, why am I blanking on the friggin' face cream story from Mark Russell?
Sorry.
The Rumpus Room.
Rumpus Room.
There we go. Yep.
And he's got the one shot coming up.
Cool. It's like Death by Social Media or something like that. I know that's not the title, but I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, it's going to be excellent. But written by Mark Russell, art by, now there's a few artists on this. Now what's unique about Fantastic Four Life Story is that each issue is a different decade. So you get the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000 to 2010. Right, 2000s and the aughts, and so each sort of has a different aesthetic. So it makes sense why there's some different writers there. So you've got Sean Isaacs, who's the primary artist on issues 1-3, Francesco Manna issue 4, Carlos Magno issue 5, and Zay Carlos and Angel Unzueta issue 6.
Well done.
Like that?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. Colors by Nolan Woodward. And letters by VC's Joe Caramanga. I copied the synopsis here. I'm not going to read it because I'm going to do a better job telling you about it. than the synopsis will.
Ooh, I like that.
So, like I said, six issues goes through the 1960s through the 2010s. And
okay, yeah, that's important.
Right? And so this is a way, I think, for Marvel to give you an origin story, give it that sort of old aesthetic vibe to it, but also now bring it to current day. And they'll probably tinker, you know, with it a bit, you know what I mean, in terms of like the timeline of, you know, this particular story. But I feel like, you know, this is what Marvel will do, right? Like it did this with Hawkeye. They stole the look and the aesthetic from Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, and gave you just a little bit of the elements from that book, but they mostly used it for the aesthetic, for like the title and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, then they just sort of pull things from all these different books and kind of weave it into one story. That's exactly what they're going to do here. But like, I didn't realize this at the time. I don't know why it didn't like hit me, but like the teaser poster, right, or image that they put out when they announced, you know, Pedro Pascal and all the people, you know, for the fight for the Fantastic Four movie, it had that 1960s aesthetic vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the covers of Life Story, it's the same aesthetic, the mm-hmm. same vibe, right? Where in the teaser poster, they got them all just sort of like in the 1960s, sort of sitting around in a living room. There's some covers that are very reminiscent of that. So you can, this is definitely an inspiration for the upcoming movie. How much of this storyline will be in there? I think a lot of it, but it won't be like a linear sort of retelling. So what we get in this book and Life Story, and why I love it so much, and why I love Zdarsky's Life Spider-Man Life Story, is like there's a very human quality to the superheroes, right? We when you think of the Fantastic Four, when you think of Reed Richards, you think in milk toast, super smart, just okay, stretchy guy, right? Human Torch and Thing are definitely the two most sort of interesting characters there,
right?
But what Mark does here is he humanizes all of them. Like, yes, Reed is super smart, but he's not without some very fatal flaws, human fatal flaws. Okay. Same with Sue Storm, very smart, but she also has her own flaws. And it's a look at relationships. It's a look at life and how we drift apart over time, and how it just it's so complex, it's so layered, while at the same time giving you Galactus, right, and giving you Dr. Doom and one other character that I don't want to spoil.
Okay,
I know it's been out there for a while, but for people who haven't read this, I don't want to give it away because it's not
100%,
right? It's not necessarily like a huge thing, but you go, oh, that's how they might do that. Okay, gotcha. Right, cool. Because we're in this new phase of Marvel. I know you and I have had, you know, these conversations about like, has the Marvel, the MCU effect worn off on people? And I think to some degree it has. But I think that like this is the thing. I'm like, okay, Doctor Strange has the chance to really take us to the next level in the MCU, and it didn't. Right? Okay. Black Panther, better do it. Didn't really do it. Thor, Love, and Thunder, better do it. Didn't do it. So it's like, oh, shit, right? But I really do think Deadpool, Fantastic Four, has the ability to really bring people right back in. And if they take the elements from this series and do it right with introducing these characters, I think the MCU is going to be off like a rocket again.
I agree with you on the Deadpool and obviously the X-Men front. And I'm not saying that I question the quality of this series of Mark Russell's writing. Like, once I saw that, I was like, oh shit, okay, I can see why like this is going to be good. But I just, you know, when it comes to the MCU, it's like, yeah, if they could bring them in with Fantastic Four, great. And that's not a knock on Pascal or the cast at all. I'm not a Fantastic Four guy.
I know you're not, right? But here's
this is not a questioning you. It's just funny being on the opposite side.
There's some of the greatest bad guys, right? Are in that universe with Galactus and Doctor Doom, right? And you're going to be introducing those two characters, because I think that's what the MCU has really been lacking. Like in the first phase, or you know, or not the first phase, but let's call it, you know, the Infinity Saga, right? You had the breadcrumbs of Thanos dropped in with those end credit scenes. You knew what you were building towards, right? And so now they start giving us what's his name there? The now canceled Jonathan Majors, Kang, right? But Kang never even came close to rising to the level of intrigue and a threat to everything that Thanos was. Galactus and Doctor Doom have that potential to give you that galactic, you know, presence of real impending doom, destroyer of worlds, right? And it is that idea of Galactus that is introduced in this thing that really is the downfall of Reed Richards, right? What this book is it's the arrival, it's the fall, and it's the redemption of Reed Richards. And I love that, right? I talked about the fatal flaw that we get in these characters, right? They're humanizing flaws because you can identify with each and every one of these characters and why they are as emotionally screwed up as they are, right? So we get your classic origin story, you know, they go into space, and shit happens and they get their powers. But what I loved about this is that there was a great use, because you're going through the decades, there was great use of historical figures throughout those decades. It starts with JFK wanting to beat the Russians into space, right? And so he approaches Reed Richards to build a rocket because the first three attempts failed miserably. So this was Cassandra 4, right? Was going to be Reed Richards, you know, glory moment. We're gonna get into outer space, and he's developing this this rocket. But there's someone in the administration. It was supposed to be their project. JFK took it away from him, so he was set on sabotaging Richards. Pulls the plug on the project, but he says, you know what, fuck it, we're going to go up in space anyways. They go up there, and the way they did it was the fuel source that they needed to fly this unorthodox rocket was an antimatter fuel, goes up into space, and there's this weird cosmic rays that they weren't anticipating. Bad reaction. Boom, you've got the creation of your characters. But when Reed is up there, he sees something, and it scares the shit out of him, and it's Galactus. He doesn't know what the fuck it is he's seeing. He just knows that shit ain't good. And then from that point on, that's all Reed cares about. It is his obsession. It drives him. It drives a wedge between him and Sue, from him and, you know, the rest of, you know, the Fantastic Four. You know, Ben has his resentment because he didn't necessarily want to go up there, and he gets turned into this ugly thing. And right, so some of the familiar tropes, you know, but it really is the focus of Reed Richards obsessing about Galactus and no one believing him, everyone thinking he's crazy, and just blowing him off, and he won't stop. And it causes, you know, it causes Sue Storm to leave him. I won't tell you for whom. Not great, Bob. Right? Guess. But like, it's just, there's just all these, like, these elements to it. And it's just, you know, Reed tells, he goes, Galactus is coming. The death of the world. The death of everything. And no one believes him except for Tony Stark. And a certain scientist named Victor Von Doom, and they start working together, right? And that, you know, that poisonous relationship really, destroys the Fantastic Four, right? And then, you know, the inevitable double cross and everything, like, so it's just like there's so many layers to it, and you've got Johnny Storm, you know, dealing with his own personal shit, and what happens to him was like, oh man. Right. You see, you know, Ben Grimm come around. Right. And then, but like the fact that Reed and Sue just absolutely, like, well, Sue hates Reed. Reed never stops loving Sue, but he can't get out of his own goddamn way because of this obsession, with Galactus. And so there's some elements there, right, with Galactus, with Doom, you know, taking, you know, giving us an origin story, like a Captain America for the First Avenger type movie type story, where you can kind of, this gives you the framework for going through the decades while introducing some of these characters, right? Because in this, Galactus is this impending doom that no one believes, but you don't really get him until close to the end, right? You get a glimpse of him in the beginning, and then you see him there at the end, but it's that ever, you know, ever-present threat and obsession, you know, that really sort of drives, you know, this story. So you get a lot of characters that we all know and love, you know, throughout the decades, you know, Captain America, Spider-Man, you know, all that. But like you get why Sue is fed up with Reed and why she leaves, but who she leaves him for? Like, are you kidding me? Oh, I was so mad. Even the second time reading, no, not a fan. Not a fan of you right now. Not great, Bob. You know, but this is just all these things. So it's very emotional. It's very well told. The aesthetic, the art aesthetic is absolutely fantastic in the way it sort of takes you through each decade, the historical moments, you know, whether it's JFK, Lyndon B. Johnson, Reagan, right? So on and so forth. These big sort of historical moments that happen just also add to the story as well. So, Nicholas, this was a really good Fantastic Four. And if it's the only Fantastic Four series you ever read, it's worth it because it's not your classic, your traditional ho-hum Fantastic Four story. There's depth to it. There's great storytelling to it. And the fact that they've all been given sort of these humanistic flaws that really sort of set them down self-destructive paths, I thought was excellent.
We've already talked about marking this show down. As you know, previously it was to make sure that Joe doesn't call me a snake in a month from now. Which you will. But I hope that when you go to say that, Joe, you also remember this moment that A, you've sold me on this story, and B, knowing what they did with Reed Richards in this story, if they take that approach, I'm all in on the Fantastic Four in the MCU. That is brilliant. You're going to take this guy who's supposed to be one of the greatest minds, if not the greatest mind in Marvel, and then you're going to go and turn him into like this mad scientist when we all know he's right, and you're going to put Pedro Pascal in that role? A thousand times yes. I absolutely loved the premise.
I wasn't sold on Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards until rereading this, and I go, he can do that so well.
Yes.
Right. I think he can because like you see Reed at his highest, you see him at his lowest, and there's no stopping him, right? And like he tunes everything up. Nothing else matters to him but Galactus. Right. His hatred towards the US government for not listening to him. Like, I'm done dealing, you know. It's just a great story.
I'm blown away. I really am. This is because Reed's the guy. The reason why I don't like, because the other three characters I'm pretty ambivalent about. Like the Human Torch has his moments, and obviously the Thing has his moments as well, like you mentioned before. And Sue Storm I'm pretty ambivalent about, but like I don't like, they don't do anything for me, but Mr. Fantastic I don't care for. But now doing this with him. Okay, this shouldn't surprise us at all, knowing that it's Mark Russell who wrote the story. He's such a good writer.
Yeah, because you don't even see Mr. Fantastic using his powers hardly, barely. Mm. It's all about him in the lab, working with Von Doom, working with Stark, trying to protect the world from Galactus. Galactus is coming.
Mm.
He's the killer of worlds. He's the killer of everything. That's what the MCU needs. They need that Thanos-like baddie.
We'll get
it here with Galactus.
Yep. Right? And then Doom built in, who can be something later on too.
Yeah, and if you'd given us breadcrumbs in the end credit scenes of Galactus, right? That's what the current MCU is missing right now. Right? They're just giving us these end credit scenes that are just jokey and funny and don't go anywhere. Right? That's what made the first run leading up to Infinity War so great. Is that there's all these breadcrumbs leading along the way because you knew something big and devastating was happening, and then it happened. Well, they have a chance to do that now. They tried to do it with Kang, just didn't work.
Right. With Galactus, it could be with obviously a lot of stuff happened with the whole Kang stuff, obviously, but with Galactus, it could absolutely work because everybody's been itching for it. And then with Marvel, you mean with Marvel, with the X-Men, that's my number one property for X-Men. There's a lot you can do in that kind of realm as well. But another one that we've talked about before that should get brought into the mix at some point too is Null. That's not now. Like with the score with Galactus, you have a lot of stuff with X-Men too. But like when you talk about having this like galactic issue, it's a formula that works. If it works again here with Galactus, Null is another one that makes a lot of sense. You just got. Mm-hmm. I would like to find a way to bring Gore the God Butcher back in the mix. I don't know if Bale would do it, but he was really good in that role. Anyways, I'm all in, Joe. Like this is you sold this well.
It's on Hoopla. It's on Hoopla. You can read it on Hoopla.
So there you go, everybody. Hoopla, and then if you fell in love with it, then go pick it up. Support Mark Russell and his work and his the litany of artists that he worked with. The book that I want to talk about this week. Let's see if we can go 2 for 2 in winning one another over here. I'm talking about The Sacrificers. Now, you all may be wondering, what is Joe? Is Joe anti-human sacrifice? I think he is. I am as well. I think that's not great. But we're dealing with animals in this instance.
I'm less against human sacrifices than I am birds.
So I had my issue with Mr. Fantastic. You won me over. I just have to get you past this bird issue, which is definitely a larger problem. However, I will say off the rip that we're not solely dealing with birds in this story. So there is that. Okay. One. Okay. I think, and I'll just tell you this right now. It's like you have this family of birds that you meet early on in the story, which you know. You see some of them throughout the first issue, and then again in the second issue, but then it's pretty much at least through the first seven issues, you really only have this one pigeon that you focus on. So that's really it. There may be like other birds in the mix, but they're not like, it's not a story only about birds, like by no stretch. Like,
okay.
So you see like reptiles, you see like these other godlike figures and all that. So that alone should be enough to break that wall down for you. Cause I know you like Rick Remender and his writing. He's the writer of this series.
Tremendous writer.
The artist of this series is Max Fiumara, who this is my first introduction to him. And I'm very excited to talk about his style. Colors, Dave McKeag, whose work is very important with Fiumara's art style, and then letters, Russ Wooten. This is still ongoing. I know on League of Comic Geeks, it's solicited out to 9 issues to this point. I don't know if there's going to be more than that. But the first 6 issues just came out in trade form, and then the 7th issue came out on the same day, just to kick off the month of April. So if you want to do a full catch-up and get right on page with everything Sacrificers, go get that 7th issue. You can, and then if you can't get that trade, get it ordered because it is available for you to pick up. This is something that the pacing is really interesting on this because it starts off a little slower and then it builds. And then you get to a certain issue, and I'll dig into that a little bit more, where things kind of just go off the rails. But I will read the synopsis just to give you guys a little bit more insight before I get going. Tomorrow is a harmonious paradise thanks to 5 families who make everything perfect for the price of 1 child per household. Now, as the bill comes due, a son expected to give everything for a family that never loved him, and an affluent daughter determined to destroy utopia must unite to end one generation's unilaterally protracted reign. Some big words at the end there. But I think our readers can put it together at least better than I can. The characters that we have in this story, I mentioned a pigeon. He is referred to as Pigeon. He is the main character, one of the main characters. He is a member of this group that is the sacrifice. Obviously, the sacrificer isn't being the title. And basically, that's what, you know, you hear about, you heard about him in the synopsis where he's like, he's one of these members that's going to be have his life sacrificed. And he's been in this family that has seemingly not loved him throughout all of this and so on. And I'll get to that a little bit more later. We have Noom, who befriends Pigeon as a fellow member of the sacrifice, but her role, she views the role a little bit differently. She sees it as more of like a blessing and a privilege, which is interesting for a litany of reasons. But as a reader, for me, that planted seeds of doubt in this story as things went along. Then we got Princess Solana, Yes, Soluna, I think is how you'd say it. She is the daughter of King Rokos and Queen Luna. And they are the leaders of the gods. But those two, so King Rokos is basically the Sun King. Queen Luna is the Moon Queen. They are her parents, but they are, while I think technically still together, I think separated would be like the legal term. Like they're still together, but they're not together. So they have, there's a whole dynamic there, and that kind of, that gets explored throughout, that definitely gets explored throughout the first arc of this. And then you have the Foreman, who you see in the first issue, in his, he's around throughout the story, but kind of becomes a more prominent figure later on in the arc. He's the gatherer of the sacrifice, and you find out there's a little bit more to his role as this arc goes along. But I'll tell you what, with the Foreman too, he's got a really cool look too. Like I have no idea exactly what his deal is, like in terms of like what's going on underneath the mask. I couldn't tell if it was him or not, but it's a mask, and you find out later what he looks like. So, and there's like an interesting, like, I don't want to obviously spoil that, but there's like an interesting element to what you, when you see that what that character actually looks like under the mask. As far as the art goes, this feels like the story was illustrated in an era, in the era that it's happening in, which like, I think and what I mean by that is this is like a high fantasy type of story, like very like old school, like, I don't want to say Lord of the Rings time, like type times, but it's like, it's along those kind of lines. But obviously we're dealing with animals and human like individuals as well. Those are the gods though. So I think like you get this old school kind of vibe, and it, to me, it makes it feel a little more authentic with, and it feels like more, it adds to the originality for me. And the colors are obviously massive in when it comes to that. But there's also the line work. I do like the designs of these gods. They feel very familiar. So we're talking. So again, we're talking about like King Rokos and like Queen Luna. Like Queen Luna, like with her design, like she walks around in just her skin, and but her whole body is basically like the moon in its surface. So like it's a very like it feels very familiar, but also like I don't think I've seen that before necessarily. Does that kind of, do you have anything like that you can think of?
No, I was going to make a joke there, but I won't.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was coming. But then, like, same with Rokos. Like, he has a look that feels familiar, but I don't think I've ever seen it before. And then and the other thing is, too, with Fjolmar's approach to, like, the inking, you're going to, when you guys read this, I mean, even if you just see the cover for the trade, you'll see like this looks dark, and this adds again to like kind of the authenticity of it. But this looks like a dark story. It very much is, in the inks and like how heavy the use of that in this story, like not like overwhelming, crazy heavy, but like in the very, like in a specific amount, it adds to the darkness. It adds to the dinginess of the story. And I think to circle back on what I'm saying with like the illustration, like, this feels like this is a fucked up story, man. Like, I feel like, you know what? There's like a fairy tale about this story and that we've heard about over the years, but this shit's actually the real fucking story. And like this art really like brings you in that way. And then when it comes to the writing, so this first issue starts off on a little bit of a slower pace. I know you couldn't get past it because of the birds. I get it. You have the slower, sad tone in this first issue. Then the second issue, things kind of get called into question. Maybe there's a nice spin on this. I don't know. And then the third issue, things get fucking crackers. Wild. And it's like, oh shit. Just absolutely bananas. And it's just the start of things. Because like issue 5 and issue 6, man, like things get ratcheted up in ways that you would not have seen coming. And what, and with that too, like, there are expectations with some of these characters and the roles that you see them in. Like, we have this young princess who I mentioned before, Soluna, where, like, you have, like, because of her relation, her parent dynamic, the way we're introduced to her, there's, like, a level of expectation for the role she's kind of going to take on. Her especially, but we also see that with Pigeon as well and some of these other individuals. But with those two, I'm like, okay, this is what's going to happen here. This is going to happen here. And then Remender's like, nope, that's not, and I really like how there's that playing, like it's just like he's like walking a fine line with these characters, and then as the arc comes to a close, then you even get into the seventh issue, it's like no, like, and even when you read the synopsis too, like I feel like that can be in a way misleading, like we'll see where things go, but I really thought that was like an interesting twist that I wasn't expecting. So there's like twists abound in the Sacrificers. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. And I do think too, seriously, like if you didn't, if there weren't birds in this, you would have read this and you would have absolutely loved it. You're muted.
Yep. Sorry. I definitely was like, you know, the art definitely wigged me out a bit. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And I said, it's all yours, buddy. All yours, which is a book I love. I love Rick Remender. Speaking of which, I think he wrote Deadly Class, which neither of us have read, right?
And no, neither of us have. I was actually thinking about that today.
To discuss that on the program at some point.
Yep.
Excellent. From what I hear, it's absolutely excellent. But yeah, I'm going to at some point suck it up. Now, get past that first issue and a half, because this book has gotten a lot of praise, as it should from the sounds of it. So, I gotta check. I'll be a man.
Yeah, you can do it. And what's really interesting too, I think for the first issue, you'll get this right away. Like, it causes like it's setting this. The first issue is setting the stage for this world that you're in, the major issue that's at play. But then at the same time, it's also asking a question too, like, what would you do if you knew a child of yours was going to have to be sacrificed in some capacity? Like, if you lived in a society where this is the fucking norm, like, how would you handle this situation? Because you have like this element that's going on with this family, and then it's like you see it, and then things unravel and unfold in the way that they do, and it's just the journey of that alone was interesting.
I take a shit ton of steroids and learn how to swing a sword and kill everybody.
There you go. So there you go. That is, I'll tell you what, spoiler alert, Pigeon's dad did not take steroids. So that's the only spoiler I will give everybody. But yeah, it's like that. That's a whole nother thing. Like, it's just like, what do you like? How do you handle it in these times? Like, this is the norm. Like, what the fuck do you do? Yeah. But anyways,
kill everybody.
All right. Well, there you go. Especially the birds, right?
Oh, that first to go.
That's your target practice.
Didn't bring shit.
But that is going to do it for us this week. I think we do have another mainland episode penciled in as we slowly inch towards TLDR mainline issue 100. But again, subscribe to our audio channels, because you never friggin' know when a Fireside Chat's going to drop, because we never know when a Fireside Chat's going to drop. Make sure you subscribe there. Leave a 5-star rating review. Otherwise, you're going to learn the real meaning of Backcracker. And if you can leave a higher rating, by all means, please do. Joe, until next week, stay sexy.
I'm going to do my absolute best. Going to have to get my steps in.
I like Nick's just like, I'm out. All right, we're done.